and I'll sing you this song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, 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 rockin' robin, tweet, 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 rockin' robin, tweet, tweet, blow, rockin' robin, cause we're really gonna rock 'em tonight. Every little swallow, every chickadee, every little bird in the tall oak tree, the wise old owl, the big black crow, flap of their wings, singin' go, bird, go, rockin' robin, tweet, tweet, rock, rock, rockin' robin, tweet.
Welcome, everyone, to another edition of Community in Depth, and that music means our friends from the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center are going to tell us what is going on. We are still, of course, doing phone interviews and practicing social distancing, but I feel very close to our guest today, and I'm so happy that she called in, and we want to welcome Kendall Chergoski. She is with the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and she is here to get us caught up. How are you?
I am doing just fine. It's, you know, it's prettier out today than I thought it was going to be, and you know, there's so much going on outside.
There really is. This is the explosion time, isn't it, of nature?
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, we call that, you know, we call the study of the changing seasons and how nature responds to the seasons changing. We call that phenology. And there are so many phenological phenomena happening right now.
What are some of them, please?
Oh, well, so a lot of our spring wildflowers are starting to bloom, especially the ephemerals. So things that only bloom for like a really short amount of time and then just kind of disappear. I actually went for a hike this morning looking for some of them. We saw some hepatica. We saw, you know, some, and they all have, a lot of them have really, I think, funny names.
And
like
these are
like skunk cabbage.
Yes, what is that?
You know, the name, it does kind of smell, but it's just like nice little flowers. We also found some bloodroot, which have these beautiful flowers as well. And of course, you know, it's almost apple blossom season as well. Those are a little bit nicer of a name.
Exactly. Well, before we get into all of the wonderful things that are exploding at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, in the news lately, there's been so much talk about, are they called murder wasps or killer wasps?
Oh, my goodness.
What the heck?
Those big old killer wasps or whatever. Yep. Killer hornets.
Do we have, are they hornets and are wasps hornets or no?
So the way that bees are kind of spread out is there's a few different sort of families, varieties of bees. Here in Minnesota, we have, you know, over 450 species of bees.
We do?
That's the whole group of bees.
Good
but
gravy.
Like, you know, you think of bees, only 2% of those are like your honeybees, right? So there are lots of varieties. You got your wasps, your hornets, and then you also have your ground bees. You have like carpenter bees. All these are different kinds of bees, different varieties of bees.
So what about this one that we're hearing about?
Yeah, it's been in the news a lot. And I, you know, both Jennifer Beath, our director, and myself have had family, friends, whomever, sending us articles about them. Like, do we need to worry? No. I mean, no.
We don't? And why don't we? Because it looks like they can take down mice.
Yeah, you know, that is true. However, like most of our wasps and bees that we find in the area, especially solitary wasps, solitary bees, are actually, they're not very prone to stinging. You know, we talk about social insects like, you know, some bees and ants and everything. But for the most part, you know, anytime a bee is solitary, meaning that it kind of like doesn't really build a hive, it lives on its own, they're much less likely to sting. So you'd really have to bother, you know, a lot of these solitary wasps to get it to sting you. So I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but...
So how did they get to North America?
So far, you know, what I've read anyway, it seemed like they're only in Washington. We have had a couple of people send us pictures at Carpenter asking, like, is this one of those? And we get to be like, no, no, you would know. They're quite large. But it seems like there's a couple different theories on how they've made their way over here, like floating on debris or something. You know, there are species of insects that can cover super long distances. Like when we think about migration, we think about birds a lot of the time, but like dragonflies will migrate all the way down to, you know, South America and back up and everything. Or, you know, butterflies will migrate as well. But it doesn't really seem like these bees are not really migrators, so they must have floated over on some debris is what it sounds like.
So you don't think they're headed our way?
You know, I mean, stuff like that, it's hard to predict the spread of a species, but I would say that more so than being concerned for themselves, because I know, like, these wasps, they can really hurt you, you know, which if you're allergic enough, bees can really hurt you anyway. But, you know, more of a concern is a lot of times bees like these will outcompete, you know, sort of native pollinators. And that's really what we're concerned about is our pollinators, right?
Are they hornets or wasps? What are they?
You know, that's a great question. I'm not our resident entomologist.
Okay.
That would be, you know, our old intern Nathan is definitely, Nathan Gross is really, really good at the old insects. But yeah, they're on the solitary side. And the thing about them too is, you know, I guess I don't know whether these ones are great pollinators, but we think about bees as our pollinators when actually like wasps and other insects too do the pollinating as well.
So we should not be overly worried.
No, I would say that is
okay.
That is,
well, that's
probably
great.
The least.
I got plenty to worry about. I don't need to be worrying about that. What else is going on at Carpenter? I know that your hiking trails are open. That's fun.
Yes, our hiking trails are open. Yeah, we did go out and see some lovely spring ephemerals, and a lot of our migrating birds are returning. Mm. The next few days are kind of really huge for migrating birds across the country. Sometimes migrating birds will even move in such large groups that they'll actually be picked up on like weather radar, which I think is super cool.
Wow. So
keep an eye in your backyard.
Wow.
But alongside with that, you know, all these birds and, you know, they're coming up and they're starting to look for little birdie girlfriends and boyfriends. So, and Mother's Day is coming up. You know, we could talk a little bit about our animal parenting.
Oh, I would love to hear about animal parenting.
Yeah, I know. Month you and Jen sort of talked about finding baby birds and what to do with. Well, they're so fun. They're so cute. It's
yes.
fun to talk about baby animals. Who doesn't
yes.
like that?
Tell us about some of our animal friends and their parenting styles.
Yeah. So you know how like I feel like there are like two kinds of parenting styles. You have your like really hands off parents who are maybe on like kid 4 and are just like, yeah, youngest one can do what they want. And then you have your like helicopter parents who are really overly involved, right? Yeah, in the animal kingdom, it kind of works the same way. Really, there are two ends of the spectrum as far as, like, animal parenting. You have, like, your altricial animals, and those are the ones, like you know, like baby humans, right? No, we need a lot of extra help. And then you have your precocial animals, which don't need a lot of help.
What are some of the species that fit into those categories?
For your, like, I mean, when I think about altricial animals, like, I think about animals like puppies and kitties, a lot of mammals that they don't even open their eyes for even a couple weeks after they're born. Especially a really good example, actually, is kangaroos. You know, obviously, we don't have those here, so maybe not the best example. But when a baby kangaroo, when a joey is born, it's about the size of a jelly bean.
What?
They're the size of a jelly bean, and then they crawl their way up into the pouch, and then, you know, the pouch of the kangaroo, and then they finish their development there.
So that's a hands-on mom.
Yeah, yeah. Think of it this way. The word we use is altricial, which means that they require a lot of altruism. You need to give a lot to that baby. Needs a lot of extra care. So like deer, right? Can you think of a cute like baby, like a little fawn?
Yes.
Or an altricial animal. A lot of people, and sometimes people will find deer, young deer, and will be concerned because like, oh, they look sick. Like they can't stand very well, you know? Like a lot of deer actually like can't stand for a few days, or their legs are not very strong, you know, so they require, they need care from, you know, mama deer.
And so what's the other term besides altricial?
A precocial, like a, think of like a precocious kid. Precocial animals, like animals that can kind of walk right away after they're born. There are some animals that can even run or like fly immediately after they're hatched or born.
And what are some of those, please?
Think of like your ducklings or your goslings, right? Now is a great time to be seeing those. But also like a lot of water birds, like rails and waders, chickens. And, you know, it's sort of a spectrum too, right? Like some birds still hang around. Obviously, like ducklings hang around their mom and, you know, mom helps them eat and everything, but they can swim and move around and their eyes are open for even after they're hatched.
What about fish? Aren't fish kind of just on their own once they're born?
Oh, yeah. Fish and a lot of reptiles, too, which isn't to say that all of them are like that. There are some fish that will sort of incubate their babies in their mouths, Same what? With, like, crocodiles and animals like that. But, yeah, a lot of, like, amphibians, too. A lot of the times the strategy with these kind of animals is just, like, have a lot of babies and hopefully a couple of them will make it.
Because, really, that they're very vulnerable, aren't they, until they're full grown?
I feel like the example that gets used a lot is turtles. You know, think to sunny shores. And think about the beach and seeing just hundreds and hundreds of baby turtles, you know. Like, turtles are just so slow growing that they're really pretty vulnerable for quite a long time.
So what are you seeing at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center right now?
You know, on the same path of animal parenting, we've been seeing some cowbirds. Do you know anything about cowbirds?
Are they the ones that just steal anyone's home?
So it's not so much that they steal their home. What they'll do is the females are pretty sneaky, and they'll sneak eggs into other birds' nests.
Then they take off themselves. Yes, I've heard this. Now, explain how it works. Do they actually lay their eggs in someone else's nest?
They do. Yeah, they'll wait till, you know, mom or dad bird are off grabbing food or off the nest, and then they'll come in and they'll lay their eggs. We call that a nest parasite. Right? And a lot of the times what happens is our babies or cowbird eggs will hatch a little bit sooner than whatever, you know, else is in the nest, and they'll either kick the other ones out, or, you know, they'll get bigger way quicker and they'll be more demanding of food, and the other bird will take care of this other bird.
So the other birds really have no idea that that's not their own egg and baby?
Not always. There have been cases of some birds, you know, ejecting the cowbird chicks out of their nest, which is why sometimes if you find a baby bird on the ground near a nest, sometimes it's down there on purpose. Most of the time, no, but sometimes, occasionally.
And what kind of parenting style is that?
You know, that would be probably the most precocial I could think of. Not maybe the most, but it's a pretty good example of pretty hands-off parenting, I would say.
And how many eggs are usually in a nest at a time? I mean, is it just one egg, three eggs?
I want to say one or two, usually, but I'm sure there have been cases.
Wow. That mother, where does she go and what does she do? And does she spy on her baby?
No, yeah, I think usually they just kind of leave.
Gosh, so hands-on.
They put all the energy into laying the egg and then they go do their thing.
Okay.
And, you know, some birds like cowbirds and others can lay multiple clutches per summer.
That is sneaky. Tell me a good story.
Oh, well, one of the things, we kind of get baby pigeons kind of all year round at Carpenter. We have our little pigeon loft. I don't know if you've ever been out to see it. Just, you know, they're silly little animals. But I did want to talk about, you know, we think about mom bird incubating the nest. But pigeons will actually kind of take turns, which I think is very sweet. Mom and dad will switch off, one in the morning and one in the evening. So we feed our pigeons twice.
Very sweet.
That's a nice one. Pigeons are pretty good parents. They look silly. And the baby pigeons are very silly looking. But I have another kind of funny one. Are you familiar with phalaropes?
I am not.
Phalaropes are one of those, so they get Mother of the Year award, but not really. What will happen is, you know, mom phalarope will lay the eggs and then just completely migrate and leave dad phalarope to incubate the eggs and take care of the young.
What the heck?
You know, the birds have no, they don't care. They don't have societal expectations. They do whatever.
So when you say migrate, do they go more south then, or do they go north, or what do they do?
I believe so, yeah. I think it's a little bit later in the season, and they'll start on their migration. Just like birds, like, have you seen all the red-winged blackbirds that have been back around?
I've seen some, yes.
So when you're seeing the ones with those beautiful red wings, you're seeing the male red-winged blackbirds, and the male red-winged blackbirds will migrate sooner, and then they'll establish their bachelor pad, which is what they do. They make a bachelor pad. They have the best area, the best turf. And then the females usually migrate in about 2 weeks later. And then they scope out who has the best bachelor pad and they hang out there.
Oh, for crying out loud. Do birds migrate back to the same neighborhoods?
It depends on the bird. I believe we find a lot of the times that they end up sort of in the same space if it's a really nice area. But not always. People will find that their usual, for example, backyard bird feeder birds, you know, occasionally they'll move somewhere else if they find a better spot.
Because I know you do banding at the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center. Do you see that some of the same birds might come back to your area?
We do, yeah. We have some of this, you know, I think the really special ones are the only occasional visitors. Like, occasionally we'll get a red-headed woodpecker, which are fairly unusual for the area. But it's usually the same one and hangs around for a little bit every year.
And then where is he off to?
You know, that one I'm not sure about. I don't know if we're just a pit stop. There are some that are kind of like leapfroggers, so they'll just sort of stop over and then head on their way.
So fascinating. Yeah. What's the latest that birds will migrate up here?
I want to say like into summer, birds will still be moving around, making their moves. There's actually a really fascinating, it's called the bird cast. You know, we're looking at our weather forecast. This week it's going to be a little cold. You can also look at the bird cast. It's this huge mapping project where you can sort of see when the largest migrations are taking place. Like a weather map, basically.
Well, that's awesome.
Yeah. So right now, I think, is the hot time, but I imagine that there's some late bloomers that will be coming up a little bit later in the season.
You know, I know that everything is kind of on hold as far as summer programming for you, but where do you stand with making your plans?
You know, we're holding off on making big decisions as far as, like, summer camp goes. We're still waiting for, you know, public health officials to deem any of that safe. You know, with smaller groups, we're not quite sure. But as far as, you know, for autumn programming, we have had, you know, we've been signing classes up and we're planning our programs and everything still. So still not quite sure for summer, but really is anyone.
But you are open to the public. Explain that, please.
Yeah, so our trails are absolutely still open to the public, and we encourage people, you know, while still being sure to be respectful of shelter in place and safer at home guidelines, you know, getting out in nature, if you can even go in your yard or if you live close by, it's really good for you. That's good for the immune system, even though allergies are kicking up and we're all sneezing. But our trails are open here on the Minnesota campus, 8 in the morning to 4:30 in the afternoon. Wisconsin is sun up to sundown.
I know on your website you have a lot of good information, too. Do you want to give that out, please?
Yeah. So what we've been doing is we have been trying to work with local teachers or teachers who had planned to come out for field trips in the month of May to sort of almost try and do adapted learning from home type thing. And they're still doing activities for their kids outside, but also maybe like a meet and greet with a naturalist over Zoom or whatever. But other than that, both Abby, one of our other naturalists, and myself have been trying to keep people in the loop with all the different phenology and things that have been going on at Carpenter, posting some activities, posting some animal meet and greets, that kind of thing. So we've got all that up on our website and Facebook page, you know, carpenternaturecenter.org.
We want to thank our guest, Kendall Chergowski. She is with the Carpenter St. Croix Valley Nature Center, and do visit them if you want to get out and enjoy their trails. They are open now, and again, it's going to get back to normal soon, so we look forward to coming out and enjoying all the great things going on in your neck of the woods. Really, really nice to chat with you, Kendall. Thanks again.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me.
And you are listening to another edition of Community in Depth on AM 1460 and FM 97.7, KDWA in Hastings.
Singing his song. All the little birds on Jaybird Street love to hear the robin go tweet, 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 rock and robin. Tweet, 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 rock and robin. Tweet, tweet, tweet. Blow rock and robin, 'cause we really.